Coming up, we have a talk in two parts on the role of benefit cost analysis in water resource planning for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So our first speaker is going to be Julie Vano from Civil and Environmental Engineering.
Well, it's great to be here. I'm excited to talk to you about a project that I've been a part of that includes a lot of different collaborators looking at analyzing cost, using cost-benefit analysis to look at water resource planning. And I'm going to provide a kind of background, and then Tyler Davis, my colleague, who is also a part of the project, will provide more details, kind of the nuts and bolts of it. So who are we? The Evans School of Public Affairs has, at the University of Washington, worked in collaboration with the Congressional Research Service in Washington, D.C. So the Congressional Research Service is part of the Library of Congress and the research branch of the Library of Congress, and they work with senators and representatives to provide reports on the state of the knowledge of the science. And so we were able to work with them as an extension of their staff in providing information on this topic, which is of great interest to Congress. So it started for us as a course first in benefit cost analysis and then transitioned into a class that focused primarily on preparing this report. And we went to DC last year to present our information to the Congressional Research Service and have finished the report and turned it in. So it's exciting to have been a part of this entire process. So why are our senators and representatives interested in benefit cost analysis for water resource management? Primarily, the request for revisions is partly due to legislation. The Water Resources Development Act in 2007 requested that the principles and guidelines, so the guiding documents that use benefit cost analysis in the four federal agencies that are mentioned here, there was a request for these revisions, and so they're kind of trying to decide how these documents should be revised. And they're used by various federal agencies and also for multiple purposes, from irrigated agriculture to flood control, any water resource projects within those agencies. But within the report and within this talk, I'm really going to focus on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and how they look at benefit cost analysis regarding flood control. So the scope of the analysis was to look at planning for Army Corps projects. So this is dealing with future planning of potentially new projects, not looking at current operations. And we looked at both current criticisms and ways at which these criticisms could then be addressed using kind of the state of the knowledge. Then we also took a closer look at a case study in the Upper Mississippi River Basin. So in my talk, I'm going to address kind of the what is benefit cost analysis in water resource planning, look at why it's important for federal water projects, and then also look at how it relates specifically to core practices. And then Tyler will come and tell you a little bit more about how the principles and guidelines might be improved in the future editions of the principles and guidelines. So what is benefit cost analysis? Here is a schematic that looks at what, if you were planning for flood protection, you have the level of protection along the x-axis. So if you're protecting for a flood that's going to occur every 500 years, so a really big flood you're protecting for, your construction costs or the costs of implementing that project are going to be really high. Whereas if you're only protecting against a flood that happens every 10 years, your costs are going to be much slower. That, however, can be compared with the decrease in risk costs from implementing the project. So you're going to have reduced risk if you build and plan for the larger floods. And so it's really the total cost that you're interested in, so adding up those two lines. And then you want to find what is the minimum cost. And this seems pretty simple and straightforward, but there's really a lot of questions as to what do you include in the construction costs, what do you include in the risk costs, and things can change, so there's just natural variability in the system. So if the precipitation regime decreased for some reason, you would have less chance of flooding and your risk costs would go down, whereas if you built a levee and then built a shopping mall behind that levee, your risk costs could dramatically go up. So understanding these uncertainties in time and in place and what you include and what you don't include are all things you have to think of in doing benefit-cost analysis. Another relatively simple way of looking at it is you total up all of the benefits of a project. So you have a project that will have total benefits of $2 million, and then you total up all the costs of implementing that project and say it's $1 million. So then you would have a benefit-cost ratio of 2, which would mean your net benefit of the project would be greater than 1, and so it would be advantageous for that project to move forward, whereas a benefit-cost ratio of less than 1 means you're spending more money implementing the project than you're actually gaining from the project. So being able to identify the lemons out there and not go forward with projects that won't have a net benefit. So why do federal agencies care about this sort of analysis, and why is it important? Here, a picture is maybe worth 1,000 words. This is in Western Washington, the floods in 2006, highlighting that flood damages are expensive. And here's another list of floods that occurred in the $1 million range, including floods in the Mississippi River Valley and floods from Hurricane Katrina. So these are expensive events. So finding ways to mitigate these damages is important. Throughout our history, we have built dams and reservoirs for various purposes, but to reduce some of those risks. And as you can see from the number of dots on the left, we're in the 1800s to now the number of dots in the 2000s, those being the locations of dams, there's been a lot more infrastructure built recently. And also the cost of the damages from floods has also changed from the 1940s through 2000. So again, balancing out how much you can reduce the damages versus how much you want the infrastructure to be built up is a balance that having an objective way to evaluate this is important. And so how does this then relate to planning within the Corps? The Army Corps of Engineers is the largest agency of civil engineers. They were created in the 1700s, first to improve navigation, but since the mission has evolved to include hydropower, flood control, and aquatic ecosystem restoration. And in addition to their mission increasing, you can see this is the appropriations, so the percentage of the federal budget that have been used by the Corps has decreased. So again, emphasizing that finding those projects that have an overall net benefit, so the limited resources you have can be used for the most benefit. Again, here's a representation of how the U.S. Army Corps' planning has evolved through time. On the axis, you see time from the 1800s through today. And the complexity of the mission above, going from building to restoring, and as you can see, it's increasing with time. This is a diagram that's been revised from the National Research Council, a report that they did. And I've highlighted in red the legislation and policies that are most relevant to benefit cost analysis. And it was in 1973 where they first formalized cost-benefit analysis in a policy that was followed by the four federal agencies that I mentioned earlier. This was then revised and replaced in 1983 by the Principles and Guidelines, so the document that I've mentioned before and will keep mentioning. And then since then, there have been other forms of editions of policies that have affected benefit cost analysis, but the planning guidance notebook and the engineering circulars are only binding for 2 years. So they're there, but most of the planning still relies on the 1983 document. Recently, in 2007, there was a request to revise, which makes a lot of sense. It's been many years since it was last revised, and not only has the projects that the federal agencies now address changed in their complexity, but it's also, we now have different tools, economic evaluation tools, and that can be applied to doing benefit cost analysis that weren't available earlier. And so there were draft principles that were set out in September of 2008, and those were evaluated, but then completely revised. And the most recent update is in December of 2009. There was a draft proposal from the Council on Environmental Quality that's now being reviewed by the National Research Council. And on their website, you can look at what those principles are. They highlight that their goals are to achieve co-equal goals, to consider monetary and non-monetary benefits, to avoid unwise use of floodplains, and then to increase transparency. So these are the goals, but how these goals will then be translated into actual guidelines is an ongoing conversation, and part of the reason why we looked into this in more detail. With the changing complexity with this project, we were curious what now are the projects that the Corps is working on, and how have those changed relative to what they were before? And so we took and did a survey of committee resolutions in both the House and the Senate and looked at the language of the legislation of the Water Resources Development Act. And within that, they proposed 154 projects. And we looked at how they were, what sort of region did these projects affect? Most of them were very local in scale. Most of them were within one or two counties. There were a few that were much larger and covered regions, but overall, most of them were fairly local projects. And for example, I've listed the four different projects that were proposed for the state of Washington. They include the Elliott Bay Seawall, looking at flood control in Kelso. There was a Bonneville project looking at Rock Creek flooding, and then a project that is also includes Oregon looking at Walla Walla River restoration. So those are an example of the types of proposed projects that these principles and guidelines are used to evaluate. What are the goals of these different projects? On the left are a list of goals that we identified, and then whether or not the project proposed projects fit or specified these as goals. Half the projects had a single goal listed, but half the projects had at least three goals listed and a maximum of six goals. And as you can see, the goals of the project have changed. Only 3% of the projects mentioned hydropower, whereas close to 50% mentioned ecosystems and flood control. So these are the types of projects that we're now addressing and need to have the right tools to do benefit cost analysis or whatever tool you use to be able to evaluate whether or not these projects should move forward. The principles and guidelines, to give you a sense of what that document is about, it outlines four different categories from which you are to account for the benefits and costs. And I'll quickly walk through these. Tyler will talk in much more detail of what these different categories involve. But the four different categories are what is evaluated for individual plans. And actually, I got a little ahead of myself. Each plan, each of the proposed projects you have to propose different plans in order to, so you want to look at Walla Walla River restoration, you're going to propose 7 different ways to do it. And then with those 7 different ways, you outline what your plan is, and then you look and see what sort of national economic development it has, what environmental quality, what regional development. So you fit into each of these criteria what the benefits and costs are. And so each of the plans is then evaluated primarily with national economic development in mind. And this is the required decision criteria. So understanding what the national output of goods and services is how most of plans are currently evaluated to see which ones move forward. There is also the environmental quality account, which looks at ecology, cultural, and aesthetic effects on natural and cultural resources. This can be in both monetary and non-monetary units. If it's in monetary units, it's transferred into the National Economic Development Account. If it's non-monetary units, an example would be the number of critical habitat acres that are preserved or destroyed based on a particular project. The regional economic development is looking at more local effects. So if you have a particular project, how is it going to increase the number of jobs in that area? And so as you can imagine, if you're looking at that particular area versus the whole nation, you're going to have very different benefit and cost ratios. And it's interesting to see how then people lobby for their particular location. And then the final kind of catch-all category is looking at social effects, and this is looking at public health and safety, and kind of captures whatever isn't captured in the other events. But again, currently in the principles and guidelines, the emphasis is on the national economic development. So I'm going to conclude with my part, but to go back to kind of the 3 questions of why, what, and how. Why do this? Federal management is confronted with increasing missions and increasing costs and decreasing funds. And so benefit cost analysis is a tool that can be used in decision making, that you can start to evaluate what's included and what's excluded and what those uncertainties are. But it seems really simple, but the details get complicated because there's a lot of uncertainty. And currently, the federal agencies are using the principles and guidelines that were implemented in 1983, and that uses 4 different accounts to evaluate whether a future proposed project is implemented or not implemented. But that is currently under revision. So now moving on to question number 4. In what ways might benefit cost analysis be improved in principles and guidelines in the future? And for that, my colleague Tyler is going to come up to talk more. But if you have questions on the first part, I'd be happy to answer them now.
It seems to me that there is like a moral hazard problem that exists in this, in terms of the incentives for communities to develop areas around floodplains, because as you showed, when they developer have a new wall in the flood area, that'll increase the risk cost. It's more likely that federal funds will be directed to a local project. And I was just wondering if the Army Corps of Engineers corrects for that, and if so, or maybe that's.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect lead-in. The question is, when you're looking at projects in floodplains, what is accounted for in the increasing the risk cost of whether or not you build behind that area? Is that capture what your question was? And this is a great lead-in question. Tyler is going to address that in much more detail, but really looking at what happens behind a levee once it's built and how it's categorized is a huge question, and a really important question that will hopefully be addressed. it's not addressed as well as we thought it could be in the guidelines now, but there is definitely hope of addressing it better in the future.